Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:09 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 22nd. I thought we'd talk a little bit today about acceleration. At the chart seminar, we talk about the three major trend-ending characteristics, or indeed the three trend-beginning characteristics. The first of these is acceleration. Acceleration is a trend-ending of undetermined duration. So when we see acceleration, there are basically two broad categories of accelerations in the market. One can be a trend beginning, one can be a trend ending, or it can be a continuation pattern. But in any case, the speed with which a market moves absorbs as a great deal of the available supply at any given time, and therefore, it puts undue pressure on the price to rise quickly in order to encourage new supply into the market. And the price will continue to rally until we reach a point where enough of supply is encouraged into the market to satiate demand, at which point then we get a range at least forming, or potentially a top. Because once the price has been rallying and everyone who wants to own it has got some, then everyone who owns it becomes a potential seller. Everyone, therefore, is that represents then a source of additional supply in the market, which is sensitive to higher prices, much more so than previous holders would have been. So accelerations therefore turn into trend endings, but they're of undetermined duration because of the fact that markets can have a number of accelerations within a trend. And of course, the bigger the acceleration is, the more likely it is that it will be the ending rather than an ending. I did say there were two kinds of acceleration. The first is a trend that has been going onwards for a prolonged period of time and then accelerates. Then, of course, you have ranges. Many markets range before they trend, and then they subsequently range again until they trend again. Ranges are explosions waiting to happen. The longer something has been going sideways for, the greater the likelihood is that when it breaks, it is going to break out in an emphatic fashion. Tesla is a good example of that. It ranged between 2017 and approximately at the beginning of 2019, and then it broke downwards. And there was a cacophony of bearish news on the back of that breakdown. And there was incredibly triumphalist rhetoric being spouted by the bears. But the price soon found support, came back to test the lower side of the underlying trading range, and then broke emphatically higher. It broke through the 200-day moving average, broke up, back up into the overhead trading range, did so in a dynamic manner. The failed downside break signaled that we were going to go right back up and test the upper side of the range, and then it subsequently broke out. And since then, it's rallied 50%. So we've had an incredibly impressive advance. Now, I think it is also worth highlighting that Tesla has historically had a tendency to pause at big round numbers. It paused at 100, 200, 300, 400. We're now at 600. It's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we at least get some consolidation here in the region of $600. There were headlines circulating the globe today that the market cap has surmounted $100 billion and is now larger than Volkswagen, making it the second largest car company in the world after Toyota. But Toyota, it has got a market cap of in excess of $200 billion, so it might be at least another couple of weeks before Tesla takes that out if one were to really indulge the extraordinarily bullish forecasts that are starting to come through, because what we are now starting to see is a competitive environment in terms of raising price targets. They are now up towards $600, but they have been rallying impressively over the last couple of weeks, considering that until about last week, the majority of forecasts were still in the $300 handle. Tesla's earnings are going to be in less than 10 days. So there is a very clear potential that what we are seeing right now is a buy the rumor, sell the news type of phenomenon. But nonetheless, we don't have any real evidence yet that the advance is over, although it is well off its highs in here today. We can also see that there have been gaps in the market, that it has just been doing nothing but gapping higher. That really started back in October with the initial gap higher, and now we've had all of these runaway gaps. Now, the bigger question is whether we're not going to have a gap lower. The first gap lower is probably going to represent a peak of at least near-term, potentially medium-term significance for the share, considering the fact that we did gap higher in here today. If we were to gap lower tomorrow, for example, that would create an island reversal. And that kind of blowout in terms of the advance that we've had, it wouldn't be beyond the bounds of possibility that we do get that kind of pullback. It would be a clear signal to take profits. One has to, I think, really consider that when markets do accelerate like this, even after a ranging phase, when something has gone up by 50% in the space of only a couple of weeks, then we know that things are getting very hot indeed. But now let's consider a much more sedate chart, or a much more sedate company, like Costco. This is a trend that has been going on now for over a decade, and it has been choppy on a number of occasions, but I don't think there's any denying the fact that the pace of the advance really did start to pick up in the end of 2017, and it continues to advance here and broke out to a new high in here today. Well, it would be hard to suggest that this is an accelerating trend, but the pace of the advance is definitely picking up, and there is the potential that we're going to start to see some of these shares also moving into accelerating phases. When, for example, then we look at another what would be considered boring company like Procter & Gamble, the share hasn't quite doubled over the course of the last 18 months, but it's not all that far off it either. And the pace of the advance has been really quite historic, particularly relative to what it has been capable of doing before. One thing that we would say, if we were asked to describe the pattern that we have in Procter & Gamble over the last 30 years, what we would probably describe it as is it does tend to rise over time, but it has been prone to some extraordinary pullbacks, which have historically been really attractive buying opportunities. And that all changed in the last 18 months when this pace of the advance went absolutely haywire. This is completely without comparison, unless we go all the way back and look at the big advance that was put in right at the beginning of 1995. And this, I think, is one of the most important points. The pace of the advance picked up in 1995, and over the course of the next 4 years for Procter & Gamble, which is a really quite conservative company, the price went up almost four times. We're now in a similar type of acceleration. So what we're looking at in terms of the market profile for so many shares now is that accelerations are the order of the day. Apple has more than doubled in the last 12 months. and the pace of the advance remains intact, and it continues to hold this sequence of higher reaction lows, despite the fact that the pace on the daily chart does not look nearly as dynamic in fashion that we compared to what we have in Tesla. The advance has been really quite impressive nonetheless. It's a very similar story with Microsoft, and the pace of the advance here has significantly appreciated over the course of the last year or two. When we see a large base formation like we did in Microsoft all the way back in 2013, then it is quite likely that when it breaks out, it is going to do so in an impressive manner. And in Microsoft's case, it went up by approximately 50% before having a meaningful pullback. And then it went into a really very impressive uptrend, and it continues to extend that uptrend. I think it's worth saying that the upper side of the base formation was probably around $35, and it's at $165 today. So we are having a really quite momentous move on the upside. And of course, all of this is being aided by massive liquidity injections. The size of the aggregate total for central bank balance sheets has increased by $750 billion since October. Well, the Federal Reserve alone has done $400 billion of that, and other central banks around the world have kicked in almost the same amount. That is one of the primary reasons why we're getting these accelerations. This is really quite similar to the kind of condition that we had back in 1998 and 1999. Jay Powell has said that we've had a mid-cycle slowdown. The last time we had something like that was in 1998. The reason that we had the phenomenal bull market in the very late 1990s was because monetary policy was eased following the long-term capital management bust, and additional liquidity was poured into the market. That then ignited a bubble in asset prices, and there was the pull factor of Y2K, which encouraged people to get into the market and encouraged corporations to invest and significantly increase their capital expenditure. What's worth highlighting is that the yield curve first inverted in 1998. It initially popped on the upside and then came all the way back down and went much more inverted in 1999 and early 2000. It was when the yield curve started to push higher that was really the end. That was when the central bank had to ease aggressively to tackle the bursting bubble. What we're now presented with is an inverted yield curve that didn't last for very long back in August. The one thing that's important, I think, also to highlight is that once you do get the initial inversion, between the inversion in 1998 and the peak in 2000, the market went up 50%. Between the inversion in 2005, late 2005, and the peak in 2007, the market went up over 30%. And since the inversion in August of this year, the market has gone up approximately 15%. So this is still a reasonably consistent advance. And when we look at the consistency of the trend, these kinds of accelerations out of ranges are exactly what we expect. We have much more exaggerated accelerations in some of the larger cap shares. But the wider market is only approximately 10% overextended relative to the trend mean right now. It could easily pull back by 10% and still be in a bull market. There isn't any evidence that that is yet the case. In fact, a pullback like that would probably be quite healthy. we just don't really have any evidence that that is about to be the case. And the problem with investors concluding that the Fed has got their back is that it encourages really very aggressive speculative activity, which is why we're getting these accelerating trends in a range of different companies. The other big acceleration that is going on right now is in the palladium market. And the price was up $124.90 in here today. So this is the biggest upward dynamic we have seen in the course of this advance. I think it is what we might now start to think of as a blow-off top, where the biggest dynamics often represent when they occur after an already impressive advance, they're often representative of panic buying and the end of the bull market. Now, if we get a downward dynamic over the course of the next couple of days, then it's going to mark a peak of at least near-term significance. The conclusion that there is no available new supply to come to market at any point in the next few months is what is driving this market higher against a background where global growth does appear to have troughed and the demand for automotives is improving against a background where more pollution control mechanisms are being demanded to be put into cars, which is increasing demand for palladium and indeed rhodium and potentially also platinum. When we look at the platinum price, it has been really very depressed for a quite significant period, but it has now broken back above $1,000, and it is so far holding that move. There is the real potential that this is base formation completion, and platinum is now a fraction of the price at which palladium is trading. During the palladium bull market of the early 2000s, the price of palladium got up to about 1.75 times the price of platinum. At today's close, it is 2.31 times the price of platinum, and the pace of the relative uptrend has been clearly accelerating. So there is the potential that we could get some consolidation. But the argument for investing in substitution at these price levels has to be getting more compelling all the time. And anyone who has the ability to tap into any kind of resource where palladium can be mined, either as a whole product or as a byproduct, has got an increasingly large incentive to do so when it is trading at an $800 premium to an ounce of gold. Then we certainly can see that prices have really detached from what is reasonable. There's no evidence yet that it is over, but certainly the acceleration is telling us that the incentive to increase additional supply of the metal is becoming more compelling all the time. Then when we look at what's going on in the UK, the pound is firming from the 130 area, and it pushed on to another little new high in here today. At least it is confirming support around to the 130 area, and the Brexit deal has passed Parliament in here today and been approved by the House of Lords. So the UK will be leaving the EU at the end of January, and the transition agreement is due to expire at the end of this year. That, of course, puts great pressure on politicians to get down to business and attempt to finalize a deal, and putting politicians under the cosh in terms of trying to get a hard date at which they have to make an agreement is certainly something that should help to animate their resolve. I continue to think that the UK has the potential to tread a very different path than it has done over the course of the last decades. But it's going to require really quite significant political resolve in order to demonstrate that there is a growth-minded attitude in Whitehall. The FTSE 100 has been ranging now for 3 years, and it is right at the upper side of the range. The FTSE 250 is slowly but surely unwinding its overbought condition following the pop on the upside we had right at the end of last year. Then I think the uncertainty about exactly what's going to happen with regard to UK interest rates is probably going to be resolved in the not so distant future. 10-year gilts are pulling back from the region of the trend mean, and there is the potential we're going to get an interest rate cut in order to really start to stoke the growth in the domestic economy. Then when we look at Australia is running a fiscal stimulus, and they are beginning to think about what a quantitative easing program might look like. That is putting downward pressure on the Aussie dollar. It's going to have to sustain a move above 70 cents in order to break the overall downward bias. But as long as the Australian dollar isn't rallying in a very dynamic manner, then the Australian ASX 200 can continue to push on the upside, and it was at additional new high in here today. It's being led higher by the technology sector and the healthcare sector. When we then think about the resources sector, the ASX 300 resources index pushed on to another new high in here today and is reasserting on the upside. This has been a reasonably consistent 4-year uptrend, and it is still pushing on the upside. Then when we think about the FTSE 350 mining index, it hasn't quite yet been able to push above the psychological 20,000 level, but I do think that it is more likely than not that it will be able to do so, not least because we're probably at the trough in global growth. Generally, and I think it is the most important point, is that bull markets don't die of old age. They're assassinated by central banks. And central banks right now are doing everything they can to support global growth. They are much more interested in trying to ignite inflation than trying to maintain any kind of monetary or fiscal responsibility. And that is helping to inflate asset prices. The A-share index in China has at least steadied in here. Now, of course, there is the continued potential that we're going to have some disruption because of the coronavirus. The WHO today delayed their decision until tomorrow about extending travel restrictions beyond Wuhan. That is an uncertainty, but so far, the Hang Seng has not been coming down, at least on consecutive days. When we look at the action that we had in here today, it almost countermanded the decline that we had yesterday. But we're right in the region of the sequence of lower rally highs. If we see downside follow through tomorrow, that is going to confirm a peak of near-term significance. If the best-case scenario is that we get some consolidation above the trend mean. The Indian market continues to unwind its overbought condition. It is still holding the breakout, but it definitely needs to hold that 12,000 level, and most particularly the region of the trend mean, if we're going to continue to see higher trilateral ranging. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.